Shazam is back for midsummer. Strap on some spandex, set your faces to stunning and cut up the dance floor faster than Wolverine can say snicked as Melbourne's Queer Geek Dance Party gets its very own sequel. Guy Fieri are proud to host Shazam 2, Gaze of Future Past, back at the 86 in Fitzroy on the eve of the Australia Day long weekend. It's the ultimate pop culture party where everyone is welcome. There's going to be cocktails, cosplay and more. We have a costume competition for the very best outfit. So come on down and have a lot of fun. It's back for midsummer and who doesn't love a sequel? Check out your details at guyfieri.com.au or head to the Midsummer website at midsummer.org.au. Shazam 2, Gaze of Future Past. Hey guys, it's Dean, so I decided to do something crazy. As busy as my midsummer season always is, considering I'm doing a speed dating night, a cabaret, a geeky dance party, and hosting Midsummer Mooning, I thought, why not try to podcast my way through it? Every single year, I try to get it done, and it always ends up a little bit crazy. But this year, I'm proactive, things are different, and it's going to be awesome. So this is the first of our midsummer podcasts. Today, we are chatting to the guys from Cartooning with Pro. It's going to be a fantastic conversation and cartooning night happening at DT's. You can check out your details at midsummer.org.au. Little bit of a proviso at the start. It is midsummer, so my brain is a little bit crazy with everything that I'm doing. So I don't think I was as prepared as possible to interview these guys. Luckily, they are all over it and awesome. So sit back and enjoy the first of our midsummer podcasts, chatting to the guys from Cartooning with Pride. You're listening to Guy Fieri, episode 73.
I mean, you've given up drinking before.
Worst 8 hours of my life.
I mean, she's the one who ruined your figure in the first place.
Exactly.
She's the one who turned you into this potato that we see before.
You're very thin, aren't you, Bubble?
Yes, she's emaciated, like a brain.
How comfortable are you?
Well, on a scale of what?
Well, childbirth.
Ugh.
Great news.
She's fat.
No, no, no. Better than that.
She's dead!
No. She's blind.
Yes!
We're the Mario Brothers, and plumbing's our game. We're not like the others who get all the fame. If you think it's in trouble, you can call us on the double. We're faster than the others, you'll be hooked on the brothers. So hang on to your seat. Get ready for adventure and remarkable weeks. You'll meet the Coopers and Troopers, the Princess and the others. Hanging with the plumbers, you'll be hooked on the brothers and the friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our first midsummer Guy Fieri episode for 2015. I think it's a little bit bold of me to try to think that I'm going to do more than one midsummer episode because midsummer is always so crazy for me, as many of you know. And today I have some very special guests with us who are from Cartooning with Pride. That's an event that is happening for midsummer this year, and I'd better welcome them. Welcome, Jimmy Twin.
Thanks for having me.
That's all right. And we also, do you know what? Now I've just realised I know your first name, Andrew, but not your last. Where is it? Oh my God, it's not on the thing.
Andrew. I'm Andrew Lee. Yeah, now everyone knows.
Yes, Andrew Lee, who's also the winner of the Metal Man Art Competition for the Laird Hotel. And we also have Kenton Miller.
How do you do?
Hello, hello. Right, Cartooning with Pride, art, comics, popular culture, all of it. There's a lot of stuff in there. So let's start talking firstly about the event Cartooning with Pride that's going to be happening at DT's on the...
On the 28th of January, so it's a Wednesday night. So it'll be from 7 to 9pm, followed by karaoke for those diehard geeks within us.
I'm pretty sure everyone will be kicking on with karaoke afterwards.
I think so as well.
Absolutely. So, Jimmy, you're the one that came up with... You came up with Cartooning with Pride, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so what made you want to do an event and a talk about art and comics and gayness? Or, well, LGBTI-ness. I shouldn't just say gayness. That's not right.
Well, I think that in terms of the comic book industry, that we're coming into, I guess, a second golden era, so I guess the platinum age of, or printing ink age, whichever you think is more valuable, of cartooning. One thing that is more the mainstream comics and cartoons is better representation, I guess, than ever before in terms of queer culture, which may or may not be a good thing at times. So there's been a lot of faux pas that the major companies have done. And I think that it's prime time, if any, to start bringing together some of the people in Australia who are involved in the industries, so whether they're cartoonists, whether they're graphic novelists, whether they just dabble in art on the side, or whether they're people who are enablers, so publishers, book distributors, and also general fans, to start like talking a bit more about what makes them tick about the industry, what they like about the industry, and also giving advice to new people who want to get into the field.
I mean, diversity is a really interesting beast, I think, when we think about it, really, because it is funny, because you do think the major, say, if we're just looking at comics per se, Marvel and DC have certainly touched on the gay and lesbian here and there and promoted it accordingly. But the question is whether it's been in a strong or positive way, or whether it's been in a way that really is as a representative of the diversity in the world that we live in. It brings up a lot of interesting conversations.
It does, and even, I guess, queer culture itself, for lack of a better term, we can be our own worst enemies at times as well.
I think that's definitely that.
And there's some quite powerful stereotypes that we have fallen into, which I guess is what our mainstream perceives us as, and also how we perceive ourselves. So I guess is a good opportunity to actually look forward to say that, okay, that if we are like myself, that I'm an artist and a writer, that if wanting to put forward an idea, how not to fall into a classic trap, but how to actually have something that is deep and meaningful, or something that I want to bring forward without particularly being pigeonholed, I guess.
Well, so that's the thing. Stereotypes are a really interesting beast to try to tackle. We have them within our own queer culture. We have them we put the labels on our own heads. We do that to ourselves, just like the rest of the world does. But when you're looking at a representation of something and putting it into an artwork or a form of some capacity to present to a wider audience, you've got to strip it down to a certain degree, don't you think? You've got to take it in a bit of another direction. I'm going to chuck this at you, Andrew, because you're an artist.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at, you do beautiful work. The first time I saw your work was actually the Men and Women Art Competition.
Oh, cheers, thanks.
Which was awesome. And I'm really looking forward to seeing your exhibition that's on at the Laird over Midsummer. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But it's funny when you kind of focus on identity or a queer identity. Are there certain things you try to avoid when you're portraying, or certain things that you put in there because that's where the narrative of the visual goes?
It's a bit of a catch-22 because, the stereotype of a gay is being flamboyant and really, flaming and...
I'm kind of laughing because I have so many hand gestures just to explain that. I can't
that cliche. So a lot of gay people think, we're not like that. It's a stereotype. But then on the other hand, when you illustrate people who aren't like typically gay looking by the stereotype, then you don't instantly get that identity off the bat.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's a tough one because how do you draw gay people without some kind of signifier that they're gay?
Well, let's talk about some of the work that you did, or the work that you did for the Men and Women Art Competition, and that was, it had some men and some on their backs and things like that. And what did you use as your focus for that, to kind of portray the men in that?
The idea itself was actually inspired by just this manga drawing I saw online of these girls walking to school, I think. It was just a very innocent scene, nothing special about it. But I thought it'd be cool to do an equivalent with men, just hanging out, walking around on the street. And I thought I could kind of not make it obvious that, they're gay and going out doing something really, typical, but just kind of allude to that sense of queer masculinity.
Yeah.
So
it's I don't know, how do you do that though?
do you think it's just even any kind of intimacy between men makes them automatically not straight even?
Well, the Men on Men Art Competition is an interesting one because every single year it's an art competition about men on men, and whatever that means. And I was actually really chuffed when your artwork won, because you're so used to. There are a lot of things which are like men with their naked bodies or men kissing. There's a shot of there's always a photography image of someone fisting someone, and it was nice to see that theme depicted in a completely different tone and way.
Yeah, that was definitely something I was going for, because too often we get you see kind of a blur between pornographic kind of media and regular gay media. Like, you look at events and posters and ads and all that, and it's always, you know, the pool party with half naked guys, and you find it's very raunchy, even the innocent stuff. So I think there's a good way to just show gay men without having to always resorting to that pure physical gratuitous notion. Like, there's other aspects which are always great to explore and look into.
It's also a topic, that's incredibly difficult to explore, because you've done a excellent job, because it's refreshing to see that sort of persona that, through what you're saying, typifies sort of like gay relationships in a non-sexual manner, but that you have that innocence and play without any sort of like hidden agenda that might be behind the scenes. And I think
a lot of the artworks that when they it's like it's gay artwork, or I personally love the gay manga. I think it's just awesome and not only cool to sexually look at, but I really love it because of the way in which the colouring is done within the artwork, and you don't really notice that as much in others, but it's always to these extremes, hyper masculine or introverted masculine stereotypes in a visual, and we just get so used to them. Like Class Comics. I can't remember the guy's name, but everyone's always got really big muscles, a giant penis and all that, and it kind of hit a point where that was the visual that was being put out into the world, and you've got to really fight to strip that back and do it in the other direction.
I'm kind of smiling to myself because I think I'm probably the only one here who's ever been censored for having an erect penis in a cartoon. and that was very weird, because back in that day I was doing cartoons for Outrage magazine, which was DNA before.
Have some. I've been throwing everything out for the past 15 years of my life, and I was actually looking the other day, and I'm like, I think there might actually be one that I was going to throw out.
Dusty old archive things. And I'd done an episode, because at that stage there was no visibility of gayness, certainly no visibility of gay sex. We're talking pre-safe sex even. And I got a phone call from the editors, and we're talking back in the time when I had to submit cartoons 3 months before publication because of the cycle and everything, posting it by carrier pigeon. And the government said, we've had our government protractor on this, and you cannot show penises more than 45 degrees erect in the episode.
Oh, wow. How erect was it?
It was, I think we worked out, 48 degrees. So it was, anyway.
So what was that when you were doing that for Outrage?
I was doing a cartoon series called Bent at the Knees. And
there are totally some of those in that pile. I'm going to find them.
And it was fun, and it was a household of gay men, and I was fighting furiously, because if you think of Outrage as being like DNA, the only representation they had in the magazine were muscle-bound guys, or whatever the blow-waved permed equivalent was back in the 80s and 90s. And so one of my lead characters was chubby. There were different coloured people, different ethnicities. There were dykes in the gay magazine. Was trying for mixing it up and really trying for something other than heteronormativity. So because it was like multiple partners and...
But what's happened to that now? Like look at the depictions that we see in... Let's just look at popular culture. I'm looking at comics, and I feel like it's very white. It's very toned. If there are other ethnicities or other genders, they're not even the sidekicks. They're around the character. And I just find that really odd.
Yeah.
Like, because that's certainly not speaking to us and our community. That's for the wider one. And it just makes me want to bang my head against the wall.
Yeah, and some of the dangers they might be falling into, like Marvel's doing great sort of strides at the moment for bringing out a lot of minority characters into the spotlight.
This is true.
However, it seems to be that they're having to tick boxes, because it seems sequentially they're going, okay, that now we've okay,
we've DC's, got the black Captain DC's America, we've got
a lesbian character, okay, we've already had a gay marriage, that's fine. Okay, we'll need to be now.
Well, there was that period of time where we did have that. There was that year where we had, you know, it was kind of the battle between North Star and Batgirl, Batwoman. And in the process of it, are you looking confused?
I'm thinking of the trans visibility and.
Well, this is my big. I'm coming to the trans. The trans irritates me immensely, but I'll get to that. And I also feel like there's only so much commenting I can do, but I'll get to that. Yeah, okay.
We're running. Never stopped.
Let's start again. I know, it doesn't stop me talking. I think I've talked more than everyone else here today already. But we did have a battle for a year between North Star versus Batwoman. And when you actually look at those two big comic powers, Marvel certainly has put a lot more effort into diversity as far as gay men. And I spoke to Dan Slott about it when he was here a couple of years ago, off the record when we were doing an interview, and because he had, in Spider-Man, he actually had side characters who were gay, and he knew they were gay, but we wouldn't know for like 2 years, because someone would just be like, and this is Tom, it's my boyfriend, and he's like, the person's always been gay, it's irrelevant, but when we needed to introduce their love interest because it was a partner's dinner, well, that was the perfect time to do it, or things like that. And I asked if that was something was going on within Marvel, and he goes, no, the writers, they look at what's going on with the big strokes of the characters, but all those little characters, it's just the writer's choice. And that's really interesting because there was a period of about 2 or 3 years where there were all these background characters where their sexuality was being mentioned and not explored. And I loved it. It was so nice to have it just be a part of the framework instead of them trying to identify and communicate what homosexuality is, because how the hell do you do that?
Mm. Well, at least they're no longer being the villains or the disliked character or the token comedy relief character.
Except for December, where in Batgirl, a man who dressed up as Batgirl was the villain. So yeah, if we're going to talk about trans, at the con for Queer Geeks of Oz, when I was talking at the one at Supernova, I believe, quite a few people were asking me about the trans character, so you guys should be totally prepared, because trans is something that in popular culture, especially in comics, is something people really love to talk about. And I said my opinion completely, which is very much, I was very frustrated with the representation, because everyone clings to Batgirl because her roommate is a trans character. And I actually said my personal frustration with that was I didn't feel like the roommate, I feel like it was a decision that was made after the fact, or it was a decision the writer didn't tell the artist. I felt like the writer didn't tell the artist, because I felt like for a depiction in mainstream culture of a man who has transitioned into a woman, there are certain features that you can't hide, as opposed to a trans man, where it does go, you know, their form is a little bit different, and I felt like the artist wasn't quite sure of that. And because the character was Asian, they rested more on the Asian factor to fill in those blanks, which irritated me immensely, because I thought he was a really powerful point. And it's for the illustrator to bring a lot more of more subtlety into certain visuals to be able to represent a trans character. And I just didn't feel like that happened.
I think it goes back a bit to your point, Andrew, because comics and art, it's a bit reductionist. And with cartoons in particular, you have to communicate things through simple, really boiled down imagery that, you know, people will connect to that symbol and think, oh, that means that.
Yeah, that's right. Not to, like, going back to my exhibition, not to change the subject.
Do it.
On
do
comics.
It. But, it's okay, yeah. It's midsummer, we're talking well, lots. I may as well quickly mention that Shazam's happening. Yeah, keep going.
So one topic I rant to all my friends about and people is just the importance of diverse representation. And so that's something I tried to do with the artwork in my exhibition. And just so often you see, I guess, for example, you get an Asian character and somehow that's the Asian look, as opposed to, how do you put it? But like you get, in real life, you know, people look varied, but then you look at art and then somehow, because you simplify, people tend to think, you know, all Asian people look the same, or black people look the same. And that's just one of the challenges I tried to really explore and show you can have more than one token character.
Well, it does. They should be tokens. Mean, it does show... I've only seen one piece of your work. I'm looking forward to coming and seeing it. I've only seen one piece of your work, but you do in the sense of the shapes, not just of the shapes of their faces. And it does show through. The diversity does. So. No, yeah. It does. Yeah. Like it's more than just I hope so. It does show through. And I mean, it's one thing to say with a person's artwork where they spend a lot of time with it and have different deadlines. And obviously within the context of a comic, you're working to a very different deadline, which is some of the stuff that we've been talking about, which you would know about a little bit more from the past.
And I'm thinking about the illustration work I've done where once upon a time before Centrelink was Centrelink, they wanted a set of brochures for people of different culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds. And their thing was, just draw them all together. You know, we just do the one thing. It's like, really? You kind of want those Greeks and Turks having different kind of looks. And when I did the Korean and the Vietnamese and all that, you've actually made them look different to each other. Well, if you used your eyes, you would see that these people do actually look different. Oh.
And that's you don't realize how kind of offensive, insulting that is. Like, might be an off-the-cuff remark, but you're pretty much lumping these individual people into one group. Like, yeah, like they're a species or something. Like, they're not human.
I've done I do caricatures of people, and I've done caricatures of people sitting in the room, and the lame Anglo sitting next to me. You know, some of my best friends are lame Anglo. I should say this, but has turned and gone, "Oh, you made them all look different." I said, "Well, they."
but it's funny because you just go, we don't see that. When you look at, it's funny, I was at a big talk that was said and I turned around and went, if an alien came down and looked at the world in which we live in, they would think everyone is white. If they looked at advertising and popular culture, they think everyone is white with minority best friends that hang just behind their shoulders and are never in the forefront. And that's true. Like, it's really, there's a social change that you've got to challenge within your art and within your work. And it's because people just don't realize it. And it's just because we're constantly bombarded with
it. Yeah, and I think that's the impact of having media and diverse media, because you grow up looking at all the ads, all the magazines, and you see, you know, hot white people. That's what you grow up being attracted to. You don't realize, you know what, they're attractive people of other looks, other, you know, ethnicities. And
absolutely.
Once you diversify, that's when you start including these differences instead of, you know, shafting them aside as kind of like a niche or a fetish.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. I had a weird realization last night at DT's when I was showing someone my sex Tumblr feed, and I realized, and he was like, I really want to see a hot black man, and I was scrolling and realized, I'm like, I keep reblogging, and they're all white. I'm like, okay, so that's something I need to think about, even in that forum of what I'm putting out into it, because I don't have any preference whatsoever. But when
that raises an interesting other question, though, because while I'm all for representation, there's also the sexual exoticizing of people from different backgrounds. So if I were to post a whole bunch of pictures of hot Asian men, then it always makes me flash on a particular playwright I knew in a different state who had a range of boyfriends, and one of them accused him of being racist, and he turned to me and said, how could I be racist? All my boyfriends are Asian. And he had no sense that what he brought to those relationships was often an exploitative role. And
which is funny, though, that we see in the comic book industry this occurring, because it is a very glamorizing sort of like art form, in that you look at like the classic DC comics, like all the characters, male or female, are quite chiseled and toned, and they're all like very tall and athletic. And there's then that great opportunity to, whoever you want to represent, you can actually bring out their best characteristics. And rather than being, I guess, a caricature that you might play on someone's individuality, you could actually play on somebody's like beauty and bring that forward. And it's something.
Well, I feel like that's something that's definitely started happening within the past 10 years. I absolutely do feel like in the comic. Do we all read comics? Because we could go on for hours. I'm just. Yeah, no.
Yeah,
because we will.
I'm not up to date as much as you guys are, but I'm
up to date, like, as of last week.
Right. I don't read many, like, Marvel. I don't read Marvel and DC so much.
Mm. What do you read?
I read, I guess, more independent stuff that I just find through researching, but not. I have to get back into it, though, because I've got all these books I haven't read.
You've got a couple of weeks before the panel.
Yeah. Learn everything and make sure I'm
prepared. Well, I do. The first time I started to notice, really notice diversity in comics was actually just 11 years ago when I really started to pay attention to it. I was living in London and Young Avengers came out. And this was a comic written by Alan Heinberg, who is a gay playwright, or a gay screenwriter. And this was, it had characters of, there was a black young guy wanting to be like Captain America. Two of the characters were gay, but it wasn't revealed that they were boyfriends until like issue 5. And it wasn't revealed like, oh, by the way, we're going out. Everyone just knew. So it was within the context of you, and you'd go back and go, was there something that I missed within the story? And it wasn't the case at all. It was just a really strong and good representation of diversity within the story, with strong female characters, women taking the lead as opposed to the men, and really playing with that kind of dynamic. And it's interesting because we are in a time right now where Marvel's made a female Thor, a black Captain America, and those two things, you know, it's right at the forefront of diversity. But I also, a part of me also feels like it's a little bit tokenistic.
Yes. Because you never heard anyone complaining when Thor was an amphibian.
No. Look, I've got to stress as well, I actually love both the comics. Like, the two, the ones had three issues, ones had two. I think they're brilliant representations of those characters. But whether or not... I don't think that feeds into the world enough.
Can I just challenge you over the amphibian remark? Because the moment we saw the lizard lesbian lady lock lips on Doctor Who, we did hear the complaints come through.
Isn't it funny? Like, because
they were sharing oxygen.
Well, my problem. Okay, I didn't have a problem with the kiss of Madame Vastra. Yeah, I got it. Ooh. And Jenny. I didn't have a problem with the kiss. I felt like the kiss was overplayed. It wasn't necessary because I felt there was so much strength and intimacy within what the characters was doing that the visual of the kiss took away from the moment of their passion for me. But as far as outrage that people were having for a lesbian kiss, I love that the response is, well, they're actually, she's an alien, not a lesbian. It's like, but isn't it funny the way in which everything's focused?
So what you've been talking about, though, is the diversity within comics, and you've said that it feels tokenistic. That's still ahead of the diversity that we see within queer community at the moment.
Absolutely.
And I think not so much queer community, because like you, Andrew, I'll hunt down that which is different as a way to sustain my psyche and soul and everything. But the pink dollar, the pink mainstream... what we get to see there, it's like, oh, so only white gay boys who dream of marriage are the ones with money will make the magazines for them.
Well, okay, here's, I get to have a little fun little comment in regards to this because, as everyone knows, I'm the Melbourne editor for Same Same and I do a lot of photography on the scene. I get slammed all the time for not having enough diversity in the pictures in which I take. And I often say to people, my focus of the pictures is someone who seems comfortable enough for me to take their picture and are at the event. But if I go out of my way to try and capture every colour of the rainbow and show a completely diverse representation in every gallery, I would spend my whole night at one place and I'd maybe have 10 photos. But I do think about it even now as we're talking about it, the poster for Shazam, I just took pictures of people that I knew or were at the event last year that were comfortable having their photos on the poster and put them on in cosplay. And while there's trans people, drag queen, and gay men, I've just realised while we're talking about it that they're all white. And Midsummer, yesterday, put the event up, reminded everyone that the event's going up on the Facebook page. And it was funny, some of the comments that were coming, because the imagery that I used, I didn't have time to make a poster when the deadline was going on, and I didn't want to just have the word Shazam, so I just took some imagery from last year. And one of the images is three guys, and two of them are in Power Ranger costumes and one's in a Spider-Man costume. And a woman just wrote, so is this a men-only party? And Mitzvah were like, no, it's not. And you've got to remember as well, people don't click on the link to read the information for things. And if the first thing it says is, this is a party for everybody, no matter who you are, just come and get your geek on. Mm. And it kind of made me laugh because I'm kind of like, no one reads further. And you've got to think of every single avenue that you could possibly do to... But then, yeah... It's like the United Colours of Benetton, but then it feels forced.
Yes, if you don't want it to be contrived, but at the same time, you don't want to fall into the trap of being seen as insincere.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah, I did... I had my picture online, my winning picture, and I did get
an angry person comment on it, because I don't know if you saw it or not.
No, I did, because
a guy from America, basically, he thought, because in my MTV interview...
I was actually hoping to ask you about it, can I tell you?
Oh, yeah, you can ask about it.
Go into it, and we'll just delve in, because really...
I was just going to say, in my MTV interview, I said something like, you know, I wanted to show a bit of diversity, it was just a slight comment like that. And then he got really angry that my diversity comment kind of didn't go all the way. And I feel like when you say you want to do diversity, you have to kind of go all or none. Because the American guy was angry that I drew this Asian man in it, but he said it doesn't matter because they still have white skin. And I'm like, hang on, what if I made him darker, would that make it more valid?
Yeah.
So I was just a bit confused what he meant by what's successful and what's not successful in terms of, you know, a diverse
representation. It's funny what the word diversity brings up. And that was really interesting because... he was really not happy. He was really not okay with it. And it's just... where do you fit within the role of diversity? I often get told by women when I'm out doing the photos and they go, well, you don't want a picture of a... I've straight up been told going, well, you don't take a picture of a fat old lesbian, do you? And I've turned around and gone, I take a picture of anyone who would like to, but when you speak to me like that, it doesn't make me want to take anyone's photo. Like, would you like a picture? Well, I don't want one. And I'm like, then don't say that I'm not willing to take a photo. I'll take a photo of whoever wants it. And no,
you should do it for the sisterhood. I'm thinking, your comment, Andrew, one of the dilemmas I constantly face is that because I work in black and white, the moment I draw people or characters that are of different cultural background, if I draw an Aboriginal person, I have to make a choice. Do I sketch some cross-hatching to indicate that this person is dark in a time when we're always arguing about whether or not darkness needs to be there to even constitute Aboriginality? Yeah. And I make a choice that I know these things might have a life where they get colorized in a different version, that I don't do shading. I'll allow the features to speak for themselves.
Yeah. But they should. I think within drawing an Aboriginal character, there are certain features. Well, the nose, I think, would be a feature that really...
It really depends. See, I'd challenge you over...
Challenge me.
Your whole trans bat woman thing, I would say you want to say... that you can never make large hands smaller, and that you can never really hide an Adam's apple unless you've had enough surgery. You were saying there's some features that would never change.
No, actually, the features that I thought, and now I'm glad you've raised this way, because for me, it wasn't the hands, and it wasn't the Adam's apple, but it was actually the shoulders.
The shoulders
were the only feature that I really just felt like, and not to make them square or broad in any capacity, but I just felt like because the roommate was an Asian character, the focus was on the Asian, and then it allowed them to slip through, which frustrated me a little bit. And it doesn't mean a person needs to look like a mannish looking woman in any capacity, but you have this opportunity, and you have this. What's the word? Soapbox. To be able to... you don't even need to draw whatever a trans man looks like, but you can make a person not look like the atypical one of everyone else in the room completely, and it can speak to a broadening mind to a reader. But it still makes it tense.
So flipping over into my other life, where at the moment I'm in the middle of working on some guidelines for transgender people participating in sport, and under the law, the big challenge is, does this person have some kind of physical advantage because of strength, stamina, and physique? And just last week, I'm talking to a young gender diverse person who's about 44 kilograms, who's been told that she can't play on an all-female football team because of strength, stamina, and physique, when any other woman on the team would be able to trample all over her, because they go for the meaning in the law. And there's assumptions galore that all men are bigger, all women are smaller. We look around and we just see people come in different sizes and shapes all the time.
Yeah.
So I think that one of the other challenges around trans is that your goal is not to be trans. Your goal is to pass as the gender that you're becoming.
Absolutely.
So for you to look like everyone
else. But I feel like you do that by being the gender that you are. Like, there are both trans men and trans women who I don't look at as a man in a woman's body or a woman in a man's body. I just look at them as who they are. And for me, anyway, and I guess maybe that's why for me, when I was looking, I was reading it and I was getting the comic, and I was excited for what could come from that. I felt like that element wasn't captured, and possibly that's why I focused so much on the look.
I had more of an issue with the writers, to be honest, than the drawings. So.
Well, they didn't really take that. It's like, I'm trans, and they didn't really take it in any further capacity.
No, it was sort of comments in isolation.
Like, it would have been great to have, like, I personally would love, within the context of a comic, to have the conversation about what does that mean and what does this mean, but then for the person, you know how you have those conversations where you go, well, it doesn't mean anything. That conversation is so important. And actually, where is the notes of my head has gone out completely out of my head, but Kevin Keller and Archie and the way that they've done that within the comic book universe, I think has been the most successful representation of diversity and homosexuality in comic books in years.
Now, I don't know the answer to this. I'm just putting it out there. Do you know if there has been any major backlash? Because for America's sort of like homegrown
not
boy,
from what I've seen. I mean, you can see this or that or online, but Dan Parrish, I believe his name is, and if I'm wrong, I apologise, and we'll write it in the notes of the episode. But it's the way in which it was done was absolutely brilliant. And you've got something like Riverdale, where they've got this space, they've got this 1950s, 60s town, they have diverse characters, everyone is friendly, so you haven't read did you read Kevin Keller?
Yes.
It made me, the second issue made me cry with joy. I actually bought a whole copy of it and sent them to Minus 18 because I thought it was so good and people should just read this story so much. And because the way in which they're telling stories about that I've gone through as a gay man, but in a way that's about a person. And it can speak to people on so many levels, and it's really strong. But it's not something, when we get into, say, the superhero universe, where they're so used to this augmented world and augmented reality that they don't know how to just let them just be gay. So when North Star, as a prime example, when Kelly Sue DeConnick took over Amazing X-Men... Sorry, I feel like I'm talking too much again. And she just went, well, he's just going to be in a relationship, fighting the battles like everyone else, having to deal with green card issues and things like that. But in trying to normalize it, there was a disconnect to the reality that in which we previously knew, and readers couldn't respond to it as well because they just wanted the hyper homosexualityness that they knew.
So can I ask, because I think that we're talking about representation. Andrew, what about misrepresentation? What do you see most misrepresented? Where do you see an image and you just think, oh, that just makes me want to burn them to the ground? Or
Do you mean in comics or just anything?
Anything.
I think, I can't think of any like specific examples right now, but if you look at TV and movies and anything, a lot of the times, these people from other cultures, they're portrayed as like stereotypes of that culture in a sense, or that's like a karate master or someone, what's my example?
The shop that sells the mogwai.
It's like, oh, you go to Chinatown to get that, and it's all the, ridiculous.
Yeah, and, there's so many just local Asian Australians, Asian Americans, and they're everywhere, but you always have to get the most cookie cutter stereotype representation to show that person for some reason, and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of one thing that frustrates me a lot.
Do you know one thing I always love on TV shows, which I see, is when they'll have a character go... I've seen it quite a few lot in a lot of American TV shows lately, where there'll be someone who doesn't speak English and they're Asian, whatever nationality that may be, and a person goes, I don't speak Korean, can you tell me what they're saying? And she's like, I'm Japanese. I love whenever that moment happens, because it's just this blanket stereotype that they're trying to challenge on TV, because everyone would just assume you'll be able to do this, whatever, as opposed to a lot of shows where they'll just have the person with the slanty eyes dive into whatever scenario that could be because they can handle it, because it's one big thing.
Yeah, and I think one example that stood out to me was like the Hangover movies. Like, I haven't seen them, but that Asian guy, I forgot his name, the actor's name, but you've got him there being a complete joke, being really silly, and you just picture, like, the mainstream Americans and Australians or whoever watching it and kind of getting kind of the idea of, like, these Asian guys are just a big joke, and as opposed to being real people, you get examples like that kind of painting all Asians under this same, look and same character.
So it kind of reinforces, shall we call it, a cineplex view of life, where, and it fascinates me that the Asian sidekick and the gay best friend stroke neighbour, who always ends up getting killed before the end of the film,
yeah,
that there's a similar little box that we get to fill in both parts.
Yeah, it's almost as if the difference is, you know, the source of all their joke material, or, you know, whatever they can draw from, you know, just the gags, and as opposed to, you know, implementing it constructively into something interesting and unique. It's, yeah, they just take the cheapest aspects.
And how do we think we can challenge that?
Well, if you think of where we draw our images from, you're an average person in Australia, you watch Home and Away or Neighbours or something.
Well, I'm glad that I'm not average.
But you think of the writers who are writing this, and I'll sit there in the writer's room and go, oh, we should have an Asian, that'll be different. We should have an Aboriginal.
Actually, well, I've spoken to one of the writers and of Neighbours, and it drives them crazy. Remember when Neighbours got an Indian family?
Mm.
And it was this big news that it was an Indian family moves into Ramsay Street, and that was them showing diversity. Mm. And the only reason why they were even doing that was because the BBC were doing a big push to have a lot more diversity within their shows, which I think is ironic, because BBC have tons of diversity and they have a lot of representation. But that was Channel 10's tick of a box.
And you know what you do?
Dark-skinned people, yeah, and going, we've got an Indian family.
But then what happens is you've still got a room full of white writers, yeah, who go, well, I don't know what story to give them. Oh, I've run out of material. Can't do anything with them.
I used to hate whenever there was Italian characters. In the 90s, an Italian character on TV, because it was all the stereotypical wog. It drove me nuts.
Does it speak to you for some reason, Dean?
But it just drove me crazy with a thing where it constantly had to be, it was this, because people still just go on, you know, and you and your family, you do this. And I'm like, no, my parents are insurance brokers. Like, I don't speak Italian. It's like, oh my God, how do your family feel about that? And I'm like, well, my parents speak it, but none of us kids do, because we grew up in Box Hill. So we never spoke Italian in our family. My grandparents did. My cousin spoke it to my grandparents because they spent more time with them. But it's this funny misconception that we have because of television and movies and what it puts into the world and what it creates. But it also, even in trying to fix things, like, well, now we've got a movie that's just like this. Like, yay, there's a Black Annie, which is an awful film.
There is, but...
But that has nothing to do with her being a Black Annie.
No, and that's why we hate Korea, releasing that movie on the world. But I think that what we do have are wonderful things like The Gods of Wheat Street and Redfern Now.
Yeah. Oh.
Where you have a show that's put together by working with Aboriginal cast members, crew, to build their own world.
Yeah. Yeah? But and it's bloody fantastic, but so ridiculous that that's the only way that can happen.
Yeah.
You know, so ridiculous. I do remember, now I'm flashing back to my teens, then when Home and Away had an Aboriginal person join the cast. And she joined, well, there was an Aboriginal boy and an Indian girl, and they both joined the cast for about 4 months, was within their contract. And the Aboriginal boy was an Aboriginal artist that literally just drew snakes in fluoro paint. And it was like, wow, he's doing Aboriginal art, but modern. And he came to Summer Bay, and then he left. And the Indian girl kept wearing a bindi and came to Summer Bay, and then she fell off a cliff. They didn't have anything to do with them other than to just have them be diverse. And I'm only remembering this.
It should have been the other way around. It. They could have named the female Aboriginal character Jeddah and be done with it, you know. Let's go right back into historical mistakes.
Oh, it just...
When we see misrepresentation of things, though, in comics and media, we've talked about visibility. Where do you see any visibility outside of superhero-ness? Where do you see visibility of gay and lesbians? I do gag cartoons. I did editorial cartoons for years. I worked in different parts of the gay and lesbian press. And for me, the driving force was I wanted to see us. I wanted to have a cartoon where there were two women as the main characters, because you look at a gag cartoon and it's always a man talking to a man, or a woman doing something silly and a man having a condescending response to it. On that basic level, they stuff things up. Yeah. You want to pick up an editorial cartoon in a newspaper and see it as good as David Pope, where it's spread right across the board and everything. Why don't we see an accurate representation of ourselves?
Well, I guess we've got to be the ones that fight that and challenge that and show it, and which is why it's good that we're having something like Cartooning with Pride happening at Midsummer.
From 7 to 9 p.m. on which date?
That will be on Wednesday the 28th of January.
Don't worry, we'll be mentioning it many more times at Dixie's Pub and promoting it like crazy. But it is interesting because even just in the course of this conversation, we've gone in many, many tangents and directions and scope because we always do think about the really basic ones of gay and lesbian. And there's so much more direction when it comes to diversity and what that pride means, and especially within artwork. And then you've also got to consider in artwork, there's the style of the actual artist, you know, and that brings on a whole completely other level.
One of the more recent works that I've done that people might know are the YouTubes that I did with Daniel Whithouse from Niche.
Yes, I put them up on the GoFi page. I love them.
Cool. So for us, it was about drawing lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex and allowing people's stories to come through. And to begin with, it was like, okay, I have to draw something that I can draw quickly that's going to look the same character all the way through, blah, blah. And then we got to a certain point where we had the idea that we would have the people voice their own stories. And I said, well, shit me, I've got to actually draw the people.
Yeah.
So drawing Tony Briffer and drawing the person who was Archie.
Were they sped up? Did Jono speed them up?
Four times my speed. Okay, I wasn't
because,
on drugs.
Because, okay. I mean, just to give a quick explanation for those that haven't seen it, we'll put them up on, they'll be on the GoFi page and we'll put them up. And essentially, it's someone telling their story who are LGBT.
And I,
but not Q. I keep.
But there were two T's.
There were two T's.
Yeah.
A wasn't invented yet.
Is there an A? Oh, God.
For asexual.
Well, there are too many things. And they were telling their story, and they were from rural Australia or Victoria?
Rural and regional Australia. Daniel travelled all the way around.
As he travelled around in his truck called Bruce. And was it Bruce?
Yes.
Yes. God, I thought I got it wrong for a second. They actually voiced their story. And these really, really... just listening to it was these really strong, beautiful stories about a person and finding themselves and what that meant and sharing that. And the visual was actually Kenton's illustration. And within the letter of an L or a T, he was actually drawing the person's journey. And as the camera would pan out, once it was done, you would see their journey within the letter that identified them within their sexual zone. It's not the word.
Yeah, look, yeah.
but I constantly kept watching it. I'm like, because I always wanted to draw. I always wanted to be an artist. And I realized the only tool I really have was myself. So that's the one in which I used. I've just realized saying myself and tool is the odd thing to do within a context. But I've never able to draw. I did drawing, painting. Somehow I was never able to express myself that way. And I was watching the drawings and just going, oh my God, it's absolutely fantastic. And the fact that you did that... And still had it fit in such a way. Like, did you just go with it, or...?
With two of them, I just went with it. But we pre-planned a couple of the others and spent a lot of time on it to ruin the magic for the folks at home. The camera filmed upside down, and we flipped it in post because we tried... Jonathan Duffy, the filmmaker, was shooting over shoulders. There were shadows. It was much easier.
Oh, my God.
I think of Andrew as an artist. I'm just a humble cartoonist.
Oh,
okay?
Thank you. I find that totally, you know, wrong for you to say that. I disagree completely. But thanks for the compliment anyway.
And so, humbled here. So drawing those things, we just wanted to... What we love is that Daniel's original idea, where, as he always does, suckers a couple of his mates and says, could you just... I've had this idea. You could just, you know... And he thought we'd do all five or six of them in an afternoon. And, of course, it took... many weekends of work to get the whole thing done. The beauty of them is that the intersex one got released just as the world was starting to notice, and the first International Day of Intersex Recognition meant that they ran on Germany's version of Fox News as an explanation tool for what intersex actually is.
Wow, I didn't realise that.
They've been core to a Bristol film thing called Queer Shorts, which has been fantastic. The film people running that wrote to us and said, can we do one for each night, and we'll stretch it out so there's one on each night. And they wrote back this lovely thing letting us know that it had become the fulcrum around which the rest of the event, and people turned up to see it. I think, well, I could have just gone to YouTube and watched it, but you know, it was lovely.
To be able to see them, that would be fantastic.
And they've been used at conferences, and that's what we wanted. We wanted these stories out there, and it's easy for people to have something to watch. and listen, I think.
I think also part of the beauty of that work is watching you create the image that we then see, especially within the trans ones. I think having the narrative build that way in your head and with your eyes, it just created this wider picture. And at the end, you've got this happy image you've created of a person, and it's wonderful. And they get to see the pieces come together through the work that you guys have done, and that's really great.
And I think it's core to the work we're talking about is we need to see ourselves. It's an affirmation of our existence to see ourselves in every medium, art, television, comic books. We need to see ourselves reflected in a way that feels authentic to us.
Mm. And I think the only way we can really do it is if we end up doing it ourselves.
Yeah.
So we have to have a deep look at ourselves and find out how do we want to be represented, and take the lead what a few people have done now and continue it to say, okay, let's make sure there is a better representation across the board.
Well, that's one of the things that I think is really exciting about Midsummer, to jump into the whole festival, because it really is, in Melbourne especially, it really is our festival. It really is our pride and our moment to shine. And if you look at the guide and look at the amount of, especially visual art, is really exciting. And Midsummer this year are doing some great stuff like Tipping Point behind the Arts Centre on, I think, the opening night of my show, which is very inconvenient of them, on the 29th, I believe, of January. And it's artists showing, and there's actually one artist who's taken photos of themselves or of a person, I can't remember which, over 2 years while they transitioned. And all this really interesting stuff that does speak to us and speak to our journey. And what's really interesting within the artwork that is within Midsummer is that there's work that have been created by trans people that speak to a gay person. Not that it shouldn't speak to one or the other, but there really is this unified, I'm trying to think of the word, but there's this unified center point where it really does speak to our community. It's one of the few times that I feel like the community really feel unified in our projection of who we are.
If we want to create more versions of ourselves, a great way to do it at Cartooning with Pride is to partake in Sketch Off.
Oh, yes. I was going to say, is there going to be actual drawing?
Yeah, so what we'll have, while we have the esteemed panel of speakers talking, there'll be an opportunity for members of the audience, if they do want to pit their talents against each other, to do a Sketch Off. So during the 2 hours, they're able to draw on anything that's been discussed. So the funnier the better. So
I should bring a pad and paper as well, yeah?
Stick figures are fine, however you want to represent yourself and your work, and then there's a few great prizes then.
That's really exciting. So this is not just going to be a talk. It's 2 hours of artistic expression and conversation.
What were you going to say, Andrew?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, it's not about, you know, who can draw the best. It's just about expression creativity. So we'd love to see, you know, what's on your mind, most of all, pretty much.
Because otherwise we'll all judge ourselves and go, that doesn't look good enough. Well, I'm not going to show it to these people.
And that's really good as well, where it's someone who might not feel like, you know, they may be that good, i.e. me, or they have that skill but still want to give it a go. And it's that chance to just express and do it through that art form.
Yeah, and I think that also we're really delighted and quite humbled to have quite an accomplished graphic novelist joining us as well. So Queenie Chan, who's a female artist who's based in Sydney, that she's a great success story in how to start up by yourself, self-promotion. She starts, her love is in horror, so she wrote graphic novels with short ghost stories that herself and others have written. Then she got taken on board and illustrated a series of Dean Koontz novels into their graphic novel adaptations. That's the Odd Thomas series. So she'll be Skyping in, so let's hope technology prevails.
How are you going to make Skype work?
I'll make
in
Skype
work. Richmond. Jimmy has a magic touch. In Richmond. I don't know. Don't rely on DTs for anyone. Well, I don't know.
Now that you've mentioned our proud sponsors, it is a good time to thank them for making this space available.
It is wonderful, yes, that DTs are. DTs are the pub where every colour of the rainbow goes to have a drink. That is their new, well, not slogan, but it's been put around for lately. But it's, if there's anything to identify DTs, it's that. And
so it's not just LGBTIQA, it's R-O-Y-G-B-I-V as well.
Every bit of the alphabet, whether you... I was there just last night singing, you know, there were straight people, gay people, and you really don't see that. I don't see that diversity. Not to say that it's not there, but you don't see that diversity in any other place in Melbourne. Well, and I think part of the charm...
Indeed, in Australia or beyond, that DTS is a very unique pub and you don't really see that sort of friendly pub atmosphere.
I sang the Cheers song last night, but I felt, honestly though, it's that pub. Do you know what I mean? It is the pub where, I mean, I can go in there and chat to whomever and I don't even need to know them.
How does the Cheers song go again, Dean?
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? I don't know the second verse, but sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. Yeah. So singing blah, blah, blah. Come and see my show in Midsummer, yeah. But it's DT's. I mean, it's really great that you guys are doing this at DT's because it is a fantastic space. It's a great community hub as well, but it is the pub where every colour of the rainbow goes to have a drink.
And Bruce at DT's, he's been supportive of so many events over so long period of time, so...
Yeah.
But you want it to be just more than this event. I mean, for you, Jimmy, this event is going to lead to...
Yeah, so I'm hoping this to be more a catalyst for future events. So, one, to bring people together. If people want to network or have ideas for future sort of projects, I myself have a few projects that... One of my dreams, for instance, is to start bringing out more a traditional street press model for up-and-coming artists to put forward their talents. So a free street press for that. So this event will also be launching a call of artists for Issue Zero to help get
crowdfunding for it?
Yeah, so I do crowdfunding and also going to be starting up, because I used to run a life drawing group a few years ago, so Bent Lines. So I'm going to be starting up Bent Lines again this year, and that will be to fundraise to help this initiative also. So there's a few things coming up.
Fantastic. You always do need a starting point. That was kind of where I started with Shazam. It was like, I just want a geeky party where we can dress up and be our own geekiness and let it fly. And this is the beginning. You know, this is the beginning. Your Cartooning with Pride is the start of it and where it's going to go from there.
And I think that also another one of our speakers, Sonia Hammer, who's from Queer Geeks of Oz and Joy FM for a show, Sci-Fi and Scream, which
listeners would be aware of.
Plug for me. So there'll be Tuesday nights at 10 PM on Joy FM. She's been quite successful in getting spots for some of the major comic book conventions. So both for Queer Geeks of Oz, but also for looking at particularly getting women to be more proud to be geeks.
What's been really great...
And I think that's something that's incredibly important now.
Yeah, absolutely. But what's been really great about those has been the response from the people. Like when I spoke at the Queer Geeks of Oz one, really everyone wanted to talk. And why I'm really proud... excited about the fact that there's more scope that you want to make with it as far as networking and taking it, is because at the end of it, everyone went, what's next? And there wasn't anything. And people were literally asking me afterwards, and I'm like, well, I've just done my talk and we can become Facebook friends and talk more because that's what I do. But there, you know, what is there? And that's what this is good. This is the beginning of a bigger dialogue and more exciting time.
And I'm hoping it will also put momentum for some other people as well to say, okay, that they want to put things forward and start new initiatives going.
Absolutely.
And hopefully this will start a little bit of a momentum and tidal wave going, because I think that's what's needed in Australia at the moment.
Absolutely. That's very exciting. Well, I do want to touch on Andrew. So you're doing you're showing your exhibition at the Laird.
Yeah, that's right. It's this Saturday, so in a week. Less than a week.
Will go up before the Saturday.
Okay.
So we can say this Saturday, if you're in Melbourne, you should, in the afternoon?
Yeah, 3 to 6pm.
3 to 6pm, you should, and women are welcome as well?
Yep, everyone's welcome on
men and women,
open day, yep.
To come on down to the Laird and check out Andrew's artwork.
Yeah.
So what's your inspiration?
Well, I guess in this case, for this particular exhibition, I did have an interview with Joy FM after I won 6 months ago, and I was suggested that, you know, maybe I could do, in my winning picture, there's a picture of just the guys walking around, and they were like, you know, why don't you draw and what happens next? You know, I'll have to see what happens later on in the night in the picture. And at the time, I didn't really think of that, but then I thought it would be cool to explore those characters again and just, show men in different scenarios. And one thing I did want to stress on was that I wanted to show men in depictions that you wouldn't typically see. So being really vain, being kind of not so manly, being emotional, things like that, that kind of challenge the tough images you see all the time of men being portrayed. So it's not...
Especially in the Laird.
Well, yeah, no, I think that's really exciting to have that in the Laird.
Yeah, so Like, it's not really forced or controversial, but it's just a bit lighthearted, yeah, something casual.
But it doesn't need to be. It's your work and it will speak for itself.
Did you have fun doing them?
Yeah, it was fun, also crazy and stressful because you know how it is, you know.
Deadlines.
You set this big task, it's like, it has to be amazing. So there was a bit of anxiety, you know, coupled with the fun. But overall, it's been really rewarding and I'm like just so relaxed now that it's all, yeah, ready to...
See, I always feel like visual artists are kind of lucky in that regard in something like a festival. Don't you raise your eyebrows at me. Let me finish what I'm saying.
Is it because there's something to see, something tangible?
Well, or? No, because you create the work and then you've got to put it there and then you get to step away from it. As opposed to me, who has to create the work, put it there, be in it, and then I don't get to step away from it till the whole thing's over.
Don't worry. We still get people coming up and telling us that our cartoons were not funny, that we can't draw for crap. Oh, yes.
Isn't it?
Really? Yeah. That you can't draw for crap. Why do you think you're so good? How come your work got published and mine didn't? Yeah, yeah. People are very generous with some of their opinions. Yeah. You have to be resilient in the face of it, though.
Oh,
you may want to reconsider your pricing scheme.
Well, that's a very nice way of putting it, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Mm. Okay, well, there we go. People always have their opinions, and that's the way that it goes. Well, before we wrap up, is there anything else you guys are looking forward to in Midsummer this year?
Oh, I think with regards to the Midsummer Festival program, certainly not a first, but there's many, many... events for those who are interested in comic books and cartooning.
The geek factor of Midsummer this year is bloody awesome.
Yes, it is. Certainly is. So we've already mentioned Cartooning with Pride, and we've got the Shazam 2 dance party for those who are into cosplay. We also have, in terms of art exhibitions, we've got Andy Lee's exhibition at the Laird that we just talked about. Then we also have Sissy Boulevard over at the substation. So there's a great group of cartoonists there for that work. For a Midsummer curated event, which is at the Dark Horse Experiment Gallery, there's a few excellent illustrators there as well. So
there's the fourth,
somewhere between Sleeping and Walking, if I remember the title correctly.
There's the fourth Tudorama at Artboy Gallery. And since this podcast is going up before Friday, Friday night is the opening of that. At Artboy Gallery.
Tell to Brett Willis, yes.
Yeah, with Brett Willis's artwork. I mean, it's the fourth year that he's done it, and he's doing characters of four. I don't know. I think that's harder, so I'm assuming we'll see some Sex and the City, some Fantastic Four, some Beatles. I don't know. Ooh. But yeah, what about you guys? What are you looking forward to? Jimmy's got a list, but you know.
I don't think I'm that prepared, so I have to apologise. I do have a flick through the programme a while ago, but...
Carnival Day even?
Yeah, the March should be good. I haven't been for a while, which is really bad. I'm being a really lazy... gay person.
Gay.
So I will make an effort this year, definitely.
So you're gonna be Pride marching? It's the 20th anniversary of Pride March this year, which it just blows my mind because it's the 20th anniversary of Pride March, and still the Age got it wrong in the title this year, this weekend of the article that they wrote. Mm. So what they said? They said HIV pronto testing at Midsummer March, and I was like, it's not Midsummer March, it's Pride March.
It's always been Pride March.
It's always been Pride March for 20 years. And I actually wrote a tweet. It took me 15 minutes to edit it down to 250 categories because I put the picture and I was like, I understand your confusion, The Age, because it's only been 20 years, so how could you get the event right? And it was pronto testing at Midsummer Carnival. So many people have said to me, are they going to be doing HIV testing as they walk down during Pride March? And I'm like, oh my God.
It's their whole new jab and jog thing that they're doing.
Well,
you know,
March just... does take about 20 minutes. It's about the same time the tester comes.
Well, yeah, if you keep marching all the way down, you can get to the very end and get your results.
You know that really hideous long period that we're lining up at the beginning?
Yes, at the beginning of Pride March.
Have a stall there, and then at the other end you get the results.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, you need to be in the left line.
Oh, my God, I love it. So what about you, Kevin?
Look, I've been hanging with enough people who actually have their own events on that I'd probably get shot if I didn't list them all off, so I won't. But I've been gently reminding these people like the magnificent Jonathan Duffy in Versatile Bitch and Daniel Whitehouse in Who the Expletive Deleted
Is. We can say fuck, it's fine.
It's,
who the fuck is Daniel
Whitehouse? Well, I was trying to work out how do you pronounce McFulplitz in Superman?
Well,
how do you pronounce that?
I don't know.
You say his name backwards, he goes back to his own world. So He's got asterisks, crossed, well, hashtag.
Well, no, because last asterisk, night at DT's, because he sung last night at DT's. Oh. I got a sample of the songs that he's doing. And Daniel Whithouse doesn't sing. And he's been practicing with Jade and learning, and he sung, and it was really exciting. And he says, so come and see my show, who the fuck is Daniel Whithouse? And I'm like, ah, so it's fuck.
Yeah, that's okay. All right, so yeah. Who the fuck is Daniel Whithouse?
There we go.
I've been saying to them, guys, everyone else is like Andrew. They're not going to actually be working out what shows they're going to until the last minute.
No one does.
So they go, oh my God, it's Carnival. What are you going to? And I know where I'm going. I'm going to be going to Dolly Under the Big Top.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
That's going to be top of my list.
Absolutely. And that's really exciting.
Mm.
Dolly Under
so
the Big
Dolly
Top.
Diamond is just like center stage for me.
Well, then just hold on to your hats for Comedy Festival. That's all I'll say. She's pulling out a golden show for that one.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So get your money ready.
But I'll be there from go to woe because some of these are working days for me with my other cap on.
It's what we do. But yeah, so there's tons going on during midsummer. Do jump on and have a look at what's happening. Do jump onto the website or grab yourself a guide. We really hope that we will see you guys at Cartooning with Pride, which is happening at DT's at 7 p.m. on the Wednesday, the 28th of January. The details will be not only up on the GuyFi website and Facebook page. But you know what? Type in Cartooning with Pride onto Facebook and you can just join the page. So then you can get all the information, not just in the lead up to midsummer, but anything that's happening afterwards. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. There's going to be some great conversations and it's a really great opportunity to network and meet people and explore and express. Thank you very much for joining me today, guys.
Thanks,
Adam. I really appreciated it. I look forward to seeing you at many, many things over the next 3 weeks.
See
you guys.